My name is Dr. Mark McDonald. I am a child and adolescent psychiatrist from Los Angeles, California. I have been working with children, adolescents, and adults for over 10 years in my practice. And what I've seen in the last year and a half has been an utter disaster. I've been speaking about the pandemic of fear, not the medical pandemic, but the fear pandemic, for over a year now. It's still my belief today that fear has been the primary driving force of all of the destruction that's wrought our country since early 2020. What I'd like to talk about today, though, is not just fear, but where it leads. What I believe now, looking back over the last 14, 15 months, is that every person in this country, to some degree, has been traumatized by fear. When people, individuals and collectively, as a group, suffer fear day after day after day, being told that they're going to die if they leave their home, that their children are going to kill their grandmother if they don't put on a mask, that if they step through the threshold at school, that they're all going to infect their classmates, that creates a traumatized state of mind. Very importantly, what happens to people when they're traumatized is they lose their capacity to think, to process information, and to express courage in the face of fear. They lose all of those capacities. What happens when you lose the capacity to think, to reflect, to act on your own, to process information, to know what's true and what's not true, to be able to differentiate between the two? What happens is you become compliant. And you start to follow orders because that's all you know how to do. You don't think through what you're doing. You just do. You just act. I had a mother bring in a 13-year-old boy into my practice a couple of days ago who I have not seen, either of them, for over 1 year in my office. They've only come in through Zoom. They both came in wearing masks. And the first thing that they asked me was, "Dr. McDonald, are you vaccinated?" Very first thing. I didn't answer the question. I answered it with a question. And I said, I'm willing to answer that question, but I'd like to know why you're asking me. Why does it concern you? And the mother, she was sitting there very anxiously pulling on that mask. I call it like mask anxiety. You've probably seen this. People just constantly doing this. She was pulling it up and down and right and left, just this sort of nervous tick. And the boy had his mask on and he had an iPad and he was tapping away on the iPad. And she said, "Well, I'm asking because, well, first of all, we're all vaccinated in our family. I just want to let you know. We're all vaccinated. Not him, but we're all, the adults are vaccinated." Expecting me to give her some sort of approval for getting vaccinated. And I didn't say anything. I just listened. She said, "We're all vaccinated, but if you're not, I'm going to keep my mask on." And I just paused and I just asked her, "Why do you say that? Are you not assured that the vaccination is protecting you like it was promised?" "Well, you know, there's all these breakthrough cases. There's breakthrough. There's these variants." And the little boy, he's typing away in his iPad, and he looks up at me and he says, "Oh, yeah, there's lots of variants. And we have to be safe and we have to protect ourselves with our masks." It was like he was reading a line. He was 13 years old. And I kept asking questions, like sort of Socratic dialogue. And she started to calm down and soften. "I didn't know this. Oh, I didn't know that. Really? Oh, my, I didn't know." And I never answered the question, really, about the vaccination. But what I discovered in talking to her was that she had been traumatized for a year. She had not left her home. She had not allowed her child to leave her home. The child was only playing on computer games. He was afraid to go and do sleepovers. He was afraid to play with his friends. The father had not left the house. The whole family was traumatized, all because they thought that they were going to kill their parents, the grandparents of the child. They had gone into a zone of compliance, complete mindless, thoughtless compliance. And it was the first time, I think, that someone had sat with her in a room, face to face, not through a screen, and actually challenged that. She left feeling a bit better, relieved. She even pulled her mask down. The boy took his mask off, and she didn't correct him. And I thought, all right, that was a small battle that I won. But my goodness, multiply that over 330 million people. What a task that will be. Beyond the compliance, something else I've noticed that's even more sick and very hard to address is the identification with the abused, or the abuser, I should say. I had a patient, 26 years old, come in just a few days ago as well, delivering food from Vons to a home. He got into the store, got his food, went to the checkout, didn't have a mask on, was reminded he needed to wear a mask by the cashier, calmly told the cashier he didn't feel that was necessary. And the man behind him in line, a 70-something-year-old man with a cane, started screaming at him, "Murderer! Murderer! Murderer!" Screaming at him. He, to his credit, calmly turned to the man, told him, "I don't think it's really any of your concern," got his groceries, walked out. Another man in the store started arguing and yelling with the man that was screaming. They got into a brawl. All the employees came over. Everyone was ejected from the store. As my patient drove out of the parking lot of Vons, he turned around through his mirror and he looked at the store door. He saw the guy walking out of the store, the guy with the cane. And the first thing he did was he pulled his mask down. The very first thing. So, of course, my patient couldn't help himself. And he leaned out the window and he said, "Hey, it looks like your mask slipped." The man, the 70-something-year-old man with the cane, he began chasing him out of the parking lot with the cane, beating him with the car, with the cane. This man has started to identify with his abuser, which is really the state. I mean, the state told him that all the people that didn't get their vaccines, that don't have their masks, that they are actually the enemy. And he believes that, and he actually wants to attack and kill people because, of course, they're murderers. He's also lost his mind. So this brings me to a larger question, I think, which is, what exactly is the tactic here that's being used to make these people fearful, traumatized, compliant, identify with their abuser? I think that it's a newer tactic, at least in this country, which is one of turning groups against themselves, intra and intergroup warfare. And it's very, very effective. Where I live in Los Angeles County and in the state of California, all we hear, literally all we hear every day, front page news from the health department director. I call her the fake Dr. Barbara Ferrer because she's a PhD in social work. She's never entered a clinic, never went to medical school, and yet has absolute dominion over 10 million citizens of Los Angeles County in the very intimate details of their life about what to put on their face, whether their children can go to school or not. And she said repeatedly, this pandemic is still ongoing and largely the fault of those who haven't got the vaccines. So what does that mean? All of the people that dutifully went and got their vaccinations, thinking they could take their masks off, they could send their kids back to school, are now suffering terribly, as are their children, not because of the state, but because of you and you and you, all of you that didn't get your shots. That's what I mean by intragroup warfare. There's also this insidious process that is occurring within families. I had another family come to my office, again, just this week. These are all examples in the last 7 days. I don't even have to go back 6 months or a year. Wonderful family. Two parents, three daughters. The father and one of the daughters got vaccinated. The mother and the other two daughters did not. It's almost like a controlled experiment. They all drove to Florida and came back in a car trip. The day they got back from the car trip, all of them got sick, symptomatically. Went and got tested, all positive. The husband and the daughter, who reluctantly agreed to get vaccinated because they felt that it was the right thing to do because they're the compliant half of the family, not the wife and the daughters who were the rebels, all came to my office, and all of them admitted that they had been deceived. But they weren't fighting amongst themselves. The fight was actually with the parents of the father who got vaccinated. His parents live out on the East Coast. They're very wealthy. They have a house in the Hamptons. And every year, the family gets together to go to the mansion. And they spend a month there. Well, guess who's not invited this year? The wife and the two daughters that didn't get vaccinated. Now, that would be bad enough if they hadn't already recovered from their infection and now have natural immunity, which everyone until last March or April of 2020 knew actually conferred lifelong widespread immunity, unlike a specific vaccine. But the parents won't allow them to go to the Hamptons because they haven't received their shots. Now, I don't think they even believe that it's dangerous. I don't think they're even afraid. I think that they're using the tactic that the government gave them, this cudgel, to beat the family members who won't comply with their wishes, because of political differences within the family. So they've made this a political issue, and they've made them comply, or at least they want them to. It's caused this internecine warfare within the family. And I've heard this story from many families. I'm sure all of you have as well. All of you have heard one of these stories, if not more. So these tactics, they're fairly new to the United States, but they have been in existence for quite a long time throughout the 20th century in all of the statist dictatorships throughout the world. And they're still going on in one very prominent country, which is the People's Republic of China, the PRC. We all have heard about the social point system. We've heard about parents turning on children, children turning on parents. That is the tactic that's being applied here in the United States. It's a psychological warfare tactic, and it is highly effective. If you take something away from someone and you don't blame you or the people that you work for, you blame the others, then guess what happens? They start feeding on each other. And then you step back and you just watch the blood go into the ocean. And we're all eating ourselves up over it. Rather than turning our attention to the real enemy, which is the state, which is the teachers' unions, the pharmaceutical companies, the big tech corporations, all of the collective interests that are all igniting the feud so that we can all feed on ourselves. I believe that this problem did not just start last year. The foundation had been laid 30 or 40 years ago with fear tactics such as the environment is going to destroy us if we don't destroy all of our capitalist policies now. The country is infested with systemic racism. Everybody that doesn't have dark skin hates all of those who do. Men, awful, toxic masculinity, rape culture. All of this has been just yelled, screamed at us, more so in the last 10 years, but it certainly started 30 or 40 years ago. So we're primed to be afraid. We're primed to feel like everyone is out to get us, particularly women. Women have been victimized by this much more than men have. And a lot of the women have become hysterical. That's why we call them Karens and not Todds or James or Michaels. Hysterical women. Why? And I'm not blaming the women. They're actually the victims here. The women have been victimized because the men have started to disappear and they started to fail to display courage. When men step away, women try to fill the space. And it's not their role to fill the space of making people physically safe. That's not their role. That's the role of men. Men and women have different contributions. And that's wonderful. That's lovely. But they can't do it now because the women are hysterical. The men are emasculated. And everybody is feeding on themselves. Until we address this problem, I don't think we're going to get any further. In my next talk, I'm going to describe this and explain it on a more of a systemic level in terms of institutions and how we need to use those institutions to help support individual courage, individual displays of bravery, and how to tamp down fear. But we also, I think, really need to address some of the roots of this, and it started way before 2020. It started with a really systemic attack on our culture, similar to the attacks in the 20th century from all of the dictatorships. And we thought we had won that battle. But we hadn't. It's just come back in a Trojan horse form in a different way. This is a very, very complex issue. This is not just about integrity of body and informed consent and mass. This is very important. I'm not minimizing it. But these are all symptoms of a deeper, deeper problem that is really a psychological problem and a cultural one that we have to really attack if we want to win this current battle of medical safety, and not fall prey to the other side of the bowling alley lane, the gutter, which is safetyism, worshiping on the altar of safety. Because life is not about being safe. Life is about living fully. So let's strive for that, and I'll explain how to do that in a bit. But I want to try to just leave you with this thought that this is really more about changing your life rather than simply attacking a purely medical problem, because it's a lot bigger than that. A lot bigger. Thank you for listening.